Hey everybody, Coach here. Hey, thanks for tuning in. It has been just a little while since I visited with you. And with my hat in my hand, I kind of apologize. There's been so many things going on. You know, one of the most damaging and destructive forces that exist in our landscape is water. A very necessary evil, to say the least. But today we discuss in depth the approach to managing water, both natural, coming out of the sky, and what we humans put to our landscape. Are you ready? Let's get her done today on Yard Coach.
Hey friends, Maestro here, just dropping a reminder to check out the podcast description for discount opportunities and any important links. Also, if you're listening to this podcast on a specific app, please don't forget to rate and review the show. It helps us grow and continue to provide these free podcasts.
Hey, welcome back. How's the crew doing? Wow, it has been a minute, huh? With all the many things that have been going on, I really do apologize for the podcast and videos kind of taking a hit. You know, Maestro and I had to make a run from northern Maine all the way out west to Idaho to fetch a cargo trailer that had many of our leftover household belongings in it. And we had to truck all the way out there from mid-March to mid-April in order to accomplish that. Now, yes, we could have drove it 18 hours a day and made it much shorter than a month, but we wanted to take our time, and sometimes the weather kind of dictated exactly what we were going to do. But hey, we are back, so let's cover the topic that we are in the midst of here at Brook and Pond, water management. You know, the damaging effects of poor water management cost homeowners across the globe, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars every year in insurance claims and out-of-pocket claims. Ah, but it's so avoidable with a little bit of forethought and careful practices that are implemented after you learning a bit, which is my whole goal here for you today, is maybe just sharpening your pencil or raising your level of awareness to a situation that maybe you've been ignoring a little bit. Hey, whether it's Mother Nature paying a wet visit day, or the owners themselves throwing water on a landscape, a few unavoidable precautions should be in place. So let's look at some of the steps you can take to manage water correctly in your landscape. First of all, beyond anything that we do to even begin this process, we have to have a grade or a slope involved in our property that allows the house or the dwelling to be at its kind of its highest point. And everything from the foundation outward should be sloped away, at least a degree, preferably 2%, but at least a degree. Here at Brook and Pond, we don't have to worry about that too much. We're kind of perched on a hillside, and there's only about two places in the whole livable part of our property that really has some water issues. And we're going to address those here in the next week or so. So whether you have built your home in the country on a lot that you have cleared or have a residential home in the burbs, grade and slope is where water management starts. That's ground zero. If you do not have that, all the other implementations that you can do are just going to be kind of an uphill battle for you. Some homes and landscapes have slope and grade, and others, well, they do not. At our last house at Weed Patch Ranch, it was a shining example of poor slope and grade practice when they put in the main house, which I learned the hard way within weeks of occupancy. We occupied it in the middle of January, and by the middle of February, we had some rain events that really painted a picture of what I was going to be doing in the weeks to come. We had ponding everywhere, front yard, backyard, and in one rain event, we had water all the way to the house skirt and even flowing underneath the house. So we had to take immediate steps in order to protect the dwelling. It was really a very prime example of very poor house placement And I take responsibility for that because when we looked at the place, it looked okay. We looked at it in the month of November and we occupied it in the month of January. And there was no rain or anything else, you know, when we looked at it. And I didn't have a clue at the time of how low the house actually was. The previous owner had placed the main house probably a good, I would say, 8 inches into the lowest part of the whole property. And it collected water very, very quickly during rain events, really did. But after placing the house, he built a shop and a garage and placed it up high, which was a key indicator that maybe he found out the hard way as well and had to take some steps in order to protect the shop and the all-important garage. Meanwhile, the house, yeah. Grading and creating slope can be challenging in some locations. I get that. I really do. Oftentimes, you should create your slope by importing a large amount of soils and gravels and compaction and raise the home foundation area up a bit to whatever grade and slope is natural, that can be created naturally and get water many, many feet away from the dwelling itself. This was not done where I was at, and I had to put drainage measures into place very fast. And trenching in the mud and other things, that was not fun. But I had to get it in and I had to get it done. Otherwise, we were going to have support pilings and foundation and other things in the threat category, shall we say. So what I did was I trenched out, perforated drain lines and graveled it and burritoed it, and then took another step, which I'll cover here in just a second. So grade and slope, number one step as far as water defense. And this is what we're talking about as far as water coming out of the sky, which is what is happening right now outside here at Brook and Pond. So let's go on to step number two. Step number two is something that we just had to pay some money for and get it on the garage and on the house itself, because it did not have it when we bought it. And that's gutters. That simple invention that they made decades and decades ago that really starts the process of water management at a building itself. And what we had learned since we occupied since last October, especially during the winter time when we had snow and we had snow melt, is the water would just drip right off the roof and right to the foundation, both of the garage and the house. There it would collect, freeze, and literally the ice would start to grow up out of the ground. And so now, with the placement of these new gutter systems, during rain events, not a problem. We can get the water off the roof, into the gutters, to the downspouts, and to another stage of water management, which I'm going to cover next. But the way it was is water and snow melt would just be dropping right at the eaves. And I only had 24-inch overhangs. So the water would drop virtually right at the front door and the slider, and it became problematic as far as splashing up onto the windows, or at least the slider door, and certainly the siding, which started to get, you know, soiled and other stuff. Thankfully, we have metal siding, so it doesn't do anything except discolor it. But if you had cedar siding, wood siding, stucco, or anything like that, it can really cause a problem as far as long-term degradation and causing a problem with water absorption into the wall, into the foundation, into the structure, the support pieces, the mud sill, etc. So the gutters really do a wonderful job of capturing that and sending it to where it should go. Now, am I saying that gutters all are the cure-all of all natural events that can come out of the sky? No, I am not. There are rain events that have happened around the globe that just overwhelm a gutter system. Just jump right over the edge because there's so much coming off the roof. It just can't handle it. No matter how big your gutters are, you could have 6-inch gutters and it could still overwhelm it. For us, we had the standard 5-inch gutters. And for 95% of the time, I think we will be fine. Even in winter when we have a snow load up on the roof, I can remove a lot of that load and the gutters aren't going to be affected. And we'll probably have some type of measure put in place this winter so that the snow load can be managed much better. A snow guard or something like that will be put up there. But now gutters do their job and will be connected to our next line of defense in a drainage system. And that drainage system starts at the downspouts. Drainage systems, like here at Brook and Pond, we've purchased 4-inch corrugated drain lines for the house and the immediate surroundings. You know, I'm going to connect the solid corrugated lines to the downspouts and run them away from the house. Some of them will be going to a perforated main drain line that's going to manage runoff in the back part of our immediate property. And then some of them are going to run away from the house and out to the front lawn towards the pond, and they'll terminate at an elbow with a pop-up emitter. I don't have to worry about grade and slope here. That is not an issue. I have more slope than I probably need. But as far as the perforated area, the back driveway area, that is the flattest part of what we have as far as our homestead here. So during the snow melt and the mud season that we had in April and just a few weeks ago, it is important to capture that water so it doesn't soften up the ground so much. You can't even hardly drive a lawn tractor back there. It gets too muddy. So to either end, heading it southwest and northeast, I'm going to run the long perforated line all the way to where it can capture the water and move it out towards the lawn area and also out back towards the property line and down to the small second creek. And like I mentioned earlier today, in fact, we have a rain event. It's not a big rain event. It's a light rain. But hey, the gutters are doing their job right as I'm speaking to you. And I had the installer put a couple of longer tail pieces on some of the downspouts for now, just to get it a few feet away from the walls of the house and the garage. And then when I go to do it, I'll take those tail pieces off or cut them back dramatically and then be able to hook up the corrugated to it, bury the corrugated in the trench that I'll be creating, and then re-graveling over it, and it'll be a nice, neat installation that won't be affected by, you know, freezing temperatures or whatever, because by then it's just going to be a trickle anyway. The big thing about drainage systems is you have to maintain them. It's another thing that a homeowner can't ignore, starting at the gutters by keeping them clean, and then every once in a while flushing out the system using a hose or whatever you have. And I will show you in the weeks to come how we install it and then how we clean it out when it's necessary. Managing this runoff correctly, the one that we know so well, the one that comes off the roof of the house, if you manage it correctly, safely, can really rid the landscape of unwanted water and the potential negative effects that that standing and collecting water can do. Drainage lines should end They really should end at a location where the water can either percolate into the soils, if your soil allows it. It's not like a heavy, heavy clay that it just sits there forever. Or at least migrate away to an area that does not threaten other parts of your landscape, or just as important, your neighbor's property as well. Many places, especially out west where we originated, no longer allow roof runoff water to be deposited at the city sidewalks or at the city streets. The cities and the decision makers have said, no, you need to put that back up into your landscape a bit, so maybe a minimum of 6 feet or more, and allow the water to percolate somewhat and really minimize the amount of water that comes out over sidewalks or into streets. Something to consider if that is applicable where you are at. Okay, so let's make a small hypothetical. Say, for instance, you do have decent slope away from your immediate area of your house, but then your landscape really flattens out, so water doesn't go anywhere, and you have taken upon yourself, you have a gutter system, you have a drainage system that maybe it's solid PVC or corrugated plastic, whatever, ABS plastic or whatever you have, and it dead ends out away from the house, but then it just stands there and it doesn't go anywhere. And you basically have pushed a problem away from the house, which was a good thing, but now you have it 20, 30 feet away and you have this small collection of ponding water. Our next step that you can employ is by consolidating your drain lines into a particular sump basin. They sell them at landscape supply stores. They sell them at sewer supply places. I've seen them on Amazon. I've seen them at landscape supply stores. Even the box stores have a kind of a cheaper version of them, but they still work. They're made out of concrete. They're made out of thick or thin ABS plastic. And these sump basins can receive flows from your 3-inch, your 4-inch drain lines that are coming from your landscape, from your French drains, from your house flow, whatever you might have, and it collects in this basin. And then you go get yourself a sump pump, much like the ones that are placed in basements, only a slight difference. And they usually have like a 2-inch discharge on them. And you capture the water at this basin and then pump it mechanically to where it needs to go, where it's safe to release that water. And I'll tell you what, I had two of these at Weed Patch Ranch. And let me tell you, they were a game changer. They really were. They took the problems that we had at Weed Patch Ranch and basically nixed it. Just cut the head off the snake right there. We had a French drain that ran down the problem side of the property where we were receiving water from a whole neighborhood that migrated down, captured that, put it into the basin, and then pumped it. And we pumped it like, good Lord, it's 300 and some odd feet to either a dry creek bed that I had, one of them, or to the public culvert that was out at the road. And it was fantastic. The only thing you have to remember about sump pumps is that they're relying on electricity, obviously, to run. So if you have a very reliable electrical grid, and even during storm events, you rarely ever lose power, perfect. But if you are prone to power outages during storms, it's always a good idea, to have some form of backup power if you're in a rural setting or, you know, a remote setting, to be able to manage that water once the power goes off. Otherwise, all you have is all your drainage going to one basin that's just going to overflow and flood. So make sure that you have a little bit of backup power so that you can use it in those events when you're really going to need it. So let's review real quick before we move on to the next segment, and that is, we've started off with grade and slope of the property itself in and around where the dwelling and the buildings are going to be. Then we've gone to the roof line and we've captured water and stuff from the roof line, delivered it through gutters and downspouts and into a drainage system. Now that drainage system can get as fancy as you need or want. It can go deliver water far, far and away. It can also capture water in problem areas or at the bases of hills and other stuff where you can, if you have a, like my very first house in Hayward, California. I mean, my gosh, I was towards the bottom of a very large hill and lots of properties. And I had a huge problem and I had to capture water quickly and redirect it around my house because it was basically going right down the back walls of the foundation and coming into the garage like a freaking spring. And so we had to take necessary precautions there and capture that water quickly and reroute it so we didn't have any foundation problems. So your drainage system can do that out there as well with catch basins and French drains and other things. So study up on that stuff if that's applicable to you. Now, what about natural water features? Here at Brook and Pond, we have two creeks and a pond. We do not have any known springs on the property. We have not seen anything like that. But we are blessed to have these. We really, really enjoy the sights and the sounds of running water and the pond, which has attracted frogs and ducks, etc. But with that comes the additional care and responsibility that goes along with natural water features and being in a place where water naturally collects and flows. The natural beauty and sound come with a cost during heavy rain events, which we have been the victim of just since being here. And we're talking a rain event of a large category. The tail ends of a tropical storm that came through in October turned our babbling brooks and our pond into raging torrents that you could hear inside the house. And going out and seeing what we saw was very unnerving. Even though it doesn't threaten the dwelling, it would certainly threaten the driveway that allows us to come and go on the property. And I have learned from a local contractor who has replaced this driveway of ours on two separate occasions when we've had unnatural rain events that have just overrun the 4-foot culvert and have just flooded out the driveway and just taken the driveway out. So with that, if you have places that have natural springs, creeks, ponds, etc., and you do have that additional responsibility of managing your landscape, managing the property you own, you know, you might want to study up just a little bit on it. Look for signs and symptoms of things that have happened in the past and what condition your brook and your pond is. If you have a pond, is it a natural pond or is it a man-made dammed up creek like what we have? You know, such torrents can be very, very scary if you've ever seen them. And we've been scared twice since we've been here. So what have I done so far? In this past week, I started some creek protection and restoration by studying up, right on YouTube University, and reading about it. I started implementing some things on the main brook in the form of a few check dams and also getting some rock and reinforcing the area upstream from our driveway. And we're going to continue that reinforcing over the course of the next couple of days. It really is starting to look good down there now. It was very eroded with lots of roots showing and stuff. And if we had a big rain event again, I could see where the driveway could get threatened. I really do. So I think with the truckload of rock that I brought in yesterday, I think we're starting the process of protection. And then some manual manipulation of some of the rocks that are existing there. I've kind of started the process. And then looking upstream from the driveway, I could see where there was a lot of winter blowdown and it was just a mess. So getting out there with a chainsaw and starting to clear the creek area of all the down timber, then repurposing a lot of the timber itself into making and settling some of the bigger timbers into the creek bed and providing a couple of check dams to slow the speed and the volume of that water if and when these events happen again. Do I think they're foolproof? No, it's the first time I've ever done it. I may end up with a rain event that washes it all out and creates even a bigger problem, but I don't think so. I think I've kind of placed them in a place that they would stand up to 90% of anything that's going to come down through these brooks. I really do. Then also the banks of the creek, especially on the house side of the creek, has really eroded terribly. I mean, it's like a 6-foot drop off. And although I don't have the equipment to go in and create a floodplain or anything like that, I did use some of the timber and the wood and other stuff that was down in the area and basically reinforced these banks so that during a rain event now, the water just won't hit the soil and just wash everything away. It will be diverted quite a bit. Using smaller branches, bigger timbers, and interlacing it and stacking it up against the wall of the creek bed, I really hope is going to pay benefits in the future. And the riprap that I got for down near the culvert, it was free. Facebook Marketplace. Who thought? Somebody in a nearby town was getting rid of a lot of rock there because they're expanding their driveway. Thank you, Brian. And the rock, they were just giving it away. So we happened to be one of the first down there and got a huge truckload yesterday. And I started the process of stacking and reinforcing it, which you will see in the video this week. And probably tomorrow we're going to get another load and continue the process. And if there's enough, probably a third load. And what's really neat is it kind of beautified the area a little bit too. I'm going to take some of the sandy gravels and stuff that are on one side of the bank, and I'm going to fill in between these stacked riprap rocks and get other things to start to root in there and really reinforce it and beautify it and naturalize it all in the same way. So if you have a natural water feature on your property, make sure that it doesn't overwhelm you. You know, it's one thing to have that babbling brook just outside your master bedroom window, provided that during something of a biblical proportion, that creek doesn't become a threat, not only to your house, but to you as well. All right, moving on. How about man-made water management, also known as irrigation? You know, can you cause problems with drainage and oversaturation of your landscape simply from irrigation practices? Absolutely, yes, you certainly can. Plus, if your property is one of those that has no slope or grade, you can create a man-made problem unless you learn about the soil conditions that you have, the percolation rate that your soil does have, and just that sweet spot of the amount of water your landscape needs if you need to supplement Mother Nature's rains with supplemental irrigation. You know, out west where we originated, the days of watering the lawn for hours on end should be a thing in the past out there. Not only in many cases is it illegal, and they have them dialed down to odd days, even days, what side of the street you're on is the day that you can water. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but it's all in the eyes of water conservation. And if you look at it through that way, if you really need water police to police people, I guess you still do, but they're out there. Yeah, water patrols. Anyway, the days of watering to the point where it's running off your lawn and then down onto the sidewalk or down the driveway or into the street. Yeah, that's gonna cost you. And many people will snitch you off out west in the Central Valley of California. Yeah, neighbors will snitch off neighbors, plain and simple. But you can mitigate a lot of this by, number one, knowledge, and then number two, correct installation practices of irrigation systems that just put water where it needs to go. Devices that are adjusted correctly that have the proper amount of throw onto your turf areas if that's what you're watering. I also think in this day and age, you're probably going to see mandatory drip irrigation devices for planting beds and trees and vegetable gardens, etc. Highly encouraged out there in the state of California. You can see that the days of huge water runoff, like when I grew up as a kid, I mean, people would turn the sprinkler on at 8 o'clock, go to work and turn it off when they came home. But water wasn't quite as expensive back then, and the conservation practices weren't in place. It was like, hey, there's plenty of water, we just use it and never lose it. Nowadays, if you've seen low water levels in reservoirs out west, it's a real thing. It really is. So using landscape water correctly, the stuff that you pay for, that comes from your municipality, is a big responsibility. And if you use it correctly, you're not going to have runoff and ponding and that kind of stuff. You won't. And I invite you to do that even if you're on a well system, which is what we're on here. And although we will be considering drip irrigation for some parts of the yard here, should we get into a dry spell, which we have been in lately, one of the drier springs on record right now, even though the heavens have opened up on us right now, it's been dry. I mean, they're planting the fields around us right now, and it's like a dust bowl. So I'm sure the farmers in our area are welcoming this light rain that we have right now, provided that they get their crop in. And lastly, as far as water management, in the future, we may be looking into a small-scale rainwater harvesting thing where we can use natural rainwater, a small amount of electricity for a pump, and be able to use a drip system that way. We're still kind of on the fence about that one. We're going to have to see what this whole first year is as far as how much water actually comes out of the sky for us and whether we need it or not. But it is a good use of the water that comes out of the sky, and you just don't shove it into a drainage system and let it go out in the forest. So, in looking back, let's review really, really quick. We start with grade and slope, a way to manage the water correctly and way to place a dwelling so that it's not threatened. Second, we do gutter systems off the house. We do drainage systems at the bottom of our gutter systems. And then we discharge to an area that's safe, that doesn't threaten anything else on your property or your neighbor's property. Make sure you do it within the confines of the rules that apply in your area. And I ask you now, how does your landscape stack up when it comes to water management? What grade do you give yourself in your yard? Is it an A+, or is it a D-, maybe an F? Or are you somewhere in between? Move it or lose it is kind of the motto for many homeowners when it applies to water management. Move it safely away or suffer things like basement flooding, structural damage from splashing, settling issues for foundations, unusable areas due to ponding and flooding. You know, when the kids' swing set out there is 3 inches underwater, for some kids that might be fun. But for the parents, they're going to get out of the mud, get out of the water, etc. So genuine concerns can cause those oh crap moments if you haven't been exposed to one, and I hope you never do. It is kind of unnerving, but it is also all very, very avoidable, however. So there you go. If you have some questions about a system that you may be wanting to put in for yourself or a problem that you have at your property, hey, feel free to reach out. Youryardcoach@gmail.com. I answered a couple this morning, and I'll answer as many as I can as long as time allows. And as always, to your landscape success, I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.